Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to my personal highs and lows of 2020 episode. So I did this episode for the first time at the end of 2019. And yeah, the feedback was just amazing. I think a lot of people connected with what I shared. So I was really excited to do another episode again this year. So again, I've done my business highs and lows in a separate episode. And for the purposes of this one, I am focusing purely on the personal side of things. So I feel like I've covered the business in detail. Now it's time to focus on the personal highs and lows. So, I mean, I'm sure we've all talked about this so much. It's been such an unprecedented year. And lots of highs and lots of lows again this year. And I found it quite interesting mapping that out, this episode out for this year, because I feel like a lot happened in the business episode. Like I've got pages, half a page here of highs and lows written for the business side. And to be honest, this personal side just came a bit harder. I feel in a weird way, I mean, so much happened this year, but at the same time, so little happened because there was no travel. There was limited time with, you know, limited to none for in terms of my own family in Ireland, to no physical time with them. So yeah, it's been a bit of a weird episode to map out, because I feel like it was quite a same year, if that makes sense. I was very, very routine orientated, at home for the vast majority of the year. And of course, all set to the backdrop of crazy global uncertainty. Like when I think about it, that the bushfires were in full swing. As I'm recording this, it's mid-December, and the bushfires were in full swing this time last year. So I kind of have to remind myself that, God, we were in crisis back then in Australia about what was going on with the fires. And then we kind of jumped from that into a really global crisis. So it's been a very, very strange, odd year. But regardless, I thought it was important to sit down, and I do love doing these episodes because they're very cathartic for me as well, just taking that time to reflect. And I actually had to pull out my Instagram and try to remind myself of what had happened the first half of the year, because it's just so blurry. In a way, 2020 felt like a very long year, but at the same time, and a long year in terms of January feels like a million years away. But at the same time, it didn't feel like there was a lot of action in it. Anyway, I'm rambling. I'm sitting here in Wade's office and in a full-on proper podcast studio, so I'm feeling very, very fancy. I'm surrounded by all the fancy equipment that I should probably be using, but I've just brought my own mic from home in, and I'm sitting here at my laptop in the podcast studio. It's soundproof, which is super cool. So I'm going to jump straight in. So again, I've listed out my highs and lows. I'm going to jump between the highs list and the lows list. And massive high from this year was our Lexi. We've just had a really awesome year with her. She's obviously experienced a lot of change, as a lot of kids did. So we actually took her out of daycare for 13 weeks during kind of that crunch ISO time here in Sydney. And she just navigated the whole year with such grace and such guts and such adaptability, and I think such understanding for us, myself and Wade, given it was just such a big year and there was a huge amount of change afoot, and a lot of, you know, there was quite a bit of conflict this year as well. So yeah, I'm endlessly proud of her this year. So she's 3.5 as I'm recording this episode. So she turned 3 just as we were coming out of ISO. I think that week was the first week that we could actually have birthday parties. We celebrated a lot of her friends' birthday parties with Zoom, blowing out the candles and the cake via Zoom. And it was really lovely to get friends together. I'd actually planned 2 different settings if we were limited on the amount of people that we could have at our house. But happily, we got to have everyone over together, which was really special. So we had a Frozen-themed birthday party. I mean, what else would we have? Elsa till we die. And she just loved the day. I was wondering how she'd cope with all our friends coming in one hit, because she's kind of got different pockets of friends. And she was just the best hostess. Every friend that arrived, she ran out and greeted them and showed them her Elsa dress. And yeah, it was really special. So, and it's been an interesting year, her being three, because I was chatting to Wade about this a while ago. I feel like the year of two, her being two, was such an action-packed year. There was so much changing. So we did toilet training. She dropped her nap. She transitioned into a big girl bed. It just felt like there was a lot happening for the year that she was two. And this year that she's three, it just seems, I don't want to say cruisy, because we definitely still have our challenges together, but it just felt like there's not these major developmental leaps that are big life adjustments like toilet training. And it's just kind of like, it's done. It kind of feels like she's a mini human. You know, if I hang out with her for the day now, we have proper conversations, and it's just like she's our little buddy now rather than a baby or a toddler. We've seen a huge change in her this year, even in particularly in the last kind of 2 to 3 months. So that's been really, really cool. And also, it's just felt much easier. So we went up to Port Macquarie in September to visit Wade's parents, and we were packing the car, and like we took the pram because she still likes her pram. And that was kind of it. Like, we didn't have the toilet training paraphernalia. We didn't have a travel cot, any kind of particular kind of bowls or spoons or food containers. Like, you just kind of picked her up and went, which was, yeah, it was pretty surreal, because I remember the previous trips up to Port Macquarie where we had all of the shit that we had to bring with us. So yeah, she's been a massive highlight this year. She also started school a couple of months ago. So she started Montessori. So that's been, she's loved it. It's like, it's been a huge energy boost for her. I think the change of scenery, she was at her previous daycare, which was wonderful, for 2 years. And I think just being with bigger kids, new surroundings, I think she's like me. She really thrives on variety and new environments. So she's really, really loved that. She's adjusted incredibly well. I'm so proud of her. But she's been tired. Like, it's been a big adjustment. I think in week 3, her third week at school, I was making dinner, and I just said to Wade, it was like 5:30, dinner was ready at 5:30, and I said to Wade, can you just go check? Because I called her and she didn't answer. And he went up to her bedroom and she closed the curtains, put on her pajamas, put herself to bed, and was fast asleep at 5:30. So she's been pretty stimulated at school, and she's absolutely loving it. So that's been really, really great. So yeah, Lexi has been a major high of this year. And a personal low of this year was my business. I covered this in a lot more detail in the business highs and lows episode. So my business has navigated the COVID shitstorm reasonably seamlessly. I mean, the only big impact that I've had has been cancelling my 3 retreats, but there's been other revenue streams. So that's been a big relief. However, Wade's business wasn't so fortunate. So their business model at the start of this year was sending university students overseas to developing countries to work on projects on the ground. So it's a social enterprise. Work on projects on the ground that would benefit the local communities. So that was their business model, and they really focused hard on that. They had one other product, which was almost like a build on top of that global product. So as you can imagine, as February things started to look a bit hairy with COVID, we started to get pretty anxious around, okay, what the hell is this going to mean for the business? And he had just successfully completed a round of raising capital for the business, which had done incredibly well. The business had been valued at multi-millions of dollars. So everything was looking brilliant, like mid-Feb. And then the wheels just started to come off the wagon pretty quick. So they had to cancel. They send university students overseas in June and July, and also in December, January. So they cancelled June, July, and fully expected that they'd be back on board and ready to go for December, January. Of course, that's been cancelled too. So it's been incredibly disruptive to him and to his team. And yeah, what they have navigated as a team this year, I mean, fucking my hat goes off to them. And I knew Wade was a resilient person. I mean, he's experienced challenges growing up, and he was in the military, experienced a lot of challenges there, business challenges. Like, I've seen him be resilient, but this has just been, holy crap, like resilience on steroids. I honestly don't know how the man's still standing. He's just incredible. And I think he's given that resilience to his team. I always thought his team were very close-knit and very, very close. And what I've actually seen as I record this at the end of this year, like, they are closer than ever. They have just bonded this year. And they went through a major drive, gosh, when was it? September, I think, where it was a big push. I won't go into all the details. I might talk about it with him when we do our end of year wrap together episode. But him and his team pretty much led an entire week of an effort to stabilize the business, which they succeeded in doing, which means that they kind of bought themselves some time to figure out some new revenue streams, which is what they're knee deep in at the moment. And they're getting some really, really positive feedback from the kind of the early stages of that. So as you can imagine, that was enormously stressful for Wade. And then there's like a halo effect then, of course, on everyone around someone who's going through such a period of intense stress, whether it's business or health or whatever else might be going on. So that was really, really hard this year. And just to see him continue to show up every day and make it happen in the face of whatever might be going on at home, whatever's going on in my business. It's been, yeah, freaking jaw-dropping, I have to say. And I think it's probably, if I'm really honest, something I haven't appreciated enough as we've been through this year, as we've gone through, just what he has made happen and how he has looked out for his team. It's been, yeah, really, really, really remarkable. So that's been a big low because, as any of you who have your own business know, that they become your life and soul, your lifeblood. So even if the two of you have a business and one of them is going pretty okay and the other one is up shit creek, you know, that obviously has a, as I said, a halo effect on everything around them, around that business as well. So that was definitely probably our biggest low from this year. And then jumping back to a high. So it's weird because the low, this high comes from a low. So a really big low we had was, I've shared previously that we had we had a very tough year last year in our relationship and also with losing two babies. And I was diagnosed with depression in August last year. It was just before my third book came out. And I actually went on antidepressants for the months of September, October, November, December, and started to wean myself off them in January. I was fully off them from mid-January. And then I felt like, okay, I want to come off medication. I don't want to be on medication long term, which, you know, that's a decision that a lot of people make, and hats off to those people. It just wasn't the decision that I personally wanted to make. So I came off the medication, and probably about 2-3 weeks afterwards, I could feel like, okay, fuck, this is where the work starts. Like the medication was a great crutch to literally prop me up and give me some space and some breathing space to actually work through what was going on with my psychologist and yeah, just diving into the work deep. But when I came off the medication in January, I realized, okay, you've really, really got to dive deep now and dig deep and get yourself and obviously help Wade, get yourself in a really good place so that you and Wade can be in a really good place. And then COVID hit like end of February that we started to realize, okay, this was going to be pretty impactful for the year. I mean, little did we know, we would still, not necessarily Australia, but I mean, the world would still be in it in a big way at the end of the year. And what then happened was Wade was obviously going through a period of intense stress with his business. And I was still trying to kind of get myself back on an even keel. Because yeah, the medication it's an artificial crutch. So then once that was, well, I was off that, then it was like, okay, you need to sort my shit out. And then given then that there was no travel, so I mean, I haven't actually figured out exactly what the stats would be, but Wade and I have been together for 11 years. It was 11 years in November just gone. And in that time, neither of us have ever been under the same roof for a whole month. Like one of us has been traveling, whether it's interstate or overseas or running a workshop somewhere, whatever the hell we were doing. So being under the same roof for quite a solid period of time, like we were during ISO here in Sydney, was pretty massive because, how can I describe this? Wade put it really well, that we couldn't kick the can down the road anymore. So whatever kind of deep-seated, deep-rooted issues that were going on in our relationship, we needed to deal with them. There was no running away from them because we weren't traveling. We were in a pretty high stress environment, both of us trying to work from home, having Lexi, both of us running these businesses, Wade's business going through the absolute fire. And we went through a really, really hard period in our relationship. And it was absolutely terrifying. And we didn't know where it was going to go. We didn't know if we were going to be able to fix it. And it was, yeah, it was, oh, I feel emotional just talking about it. It was really scary because our relationship for both of us is the glue that keeps everything together. You know, it's the glue that keeps us parenting Lexi. It's the glue that keeps us running our businesses positively. It's the glue that keeps our friendships good. So for any of you who I presume a lot of people will have experienced relationship challenges, you know, when your relationship's not good, it casts a shadow on everything else in your life and it consumes so much energy and so much mental headspace, and it was awful. And I really started to experience that stress physically, which I'll talk about shortly in this episode. So we had worked with a relationship therapist in the past called Susie, who had been really, really helpful to us. However, Wade wasn't as big of a fan because he felt, well, we just go to Susie, we talk through what's going on, she helps me understand where you're coming from, you feel better, and then we kind of keep going. So I was like, yep, that's a pretty good summary of how it works. And I had read a brilliant book called Getting the Love You Want by a man called Harville Hendrix and his wife, sorry, I can't remember his wife's name. And Marie Forleo had actually recommended this book when I saw her speak in October last year. And I read the book, and Harville Hendrix in it, the book, talks about the fact that, how can I summarize this? I had a lengthy conversation with my love club last night about this. And so what Harville Hendrix says is that essentially when we fall in love with someone, so that beautiful soulmate, kind of I've known you before type of feeling, a big reason that we fall in love with them is that they are the composite of all the great bits of our main caregivers when we were children. And we feel like we've known them before. And myself and Wade both said this when we met, and we actually both wrote this individually. We wrote our wedding vows to each other without seeing the other ones. And we both said in our wedding vows when we got married that it felt like coming home when we met each other. And it did. I felt like I'd known him before. I trusted the man with my life pretty much immediately. Although I think a lot of people feel like that about Wade. Ashley, who used to be on my team at the Remarkables group, said that if we were in like a Walking Dead situation, Wade is the one person that I would want with me. Which is funny because Wade says that I'm the last person he would want because I would be completely useless in a Walking Dead zombie apocalypse situation. But anyway, so we both felt like we were, I felt like it was like coming home. And Harville Hendrix explains that. And of course, I believe in soulmates and guidance and destiny. And I do believe myself and Wade were destined to meet. There's the whole circumstances around our meeting. I mean, it just might not have ever happened. So the fact that we did meet, I think, is amazing. And the fact that we persisted with our relationship, even though we assumed he would be going away with commandos in the army and so on. So anyway, so I do believe in all the soul stuff, but also, and I think what Harville Hendrix says, it kind of bursts the bubble a bit. It's like, oh, is that it? Is it that simple? So what Harville Hendrix then says is that as you progress in a relationship with someone who you're seeing as like you're coming home or your soulmate, is you start to get a bit more centered on them. And then maybe, I mean, not for every relationship, I'm sure, but for a lot of relationships, at some point then the shine starts to wear off and the person starts to really piss you off. And Harville Hendrix says the reason for that, it's almost like the flip side, is that person is also the composite of all the worst traits about our main caregivers when we were children. So we're attracted to them because they've all the best bits of our mothers, fathers, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whatever it might be. But then also we're almost like repelled by them in a few years or months' time because, again, they remind us of all the worst bits of our main caregivers. So that was really eye-opening for me when I read that book. I read it in February before kind of the shit hit the fan of COVID and myself and Wade. So when myself and Wade were having the conversation about, okay, how are we going to get out of this hole that we found ourselves in? We both said, look, we'd like to see someone again to help us through this relationship challenge that, not even challenge, fucking crisis we were having. And he said, I'd like to try a guy and I'd like to work with someone who's actually going to give us strategies. I don't just want to go and talk. I want strategies. So when I'd read the Harville Hendrix book, he had mentioned a few times that he had founded a school of relationship therapy, which with his wife, called Imago Therapy. So I went on the Imago Therapy website and found, like, tried to see, is there anyone in Australia who could do this? And there was quite a few, actually, practitioners in Australia. And I found a man who was two suburbs away from us. As it happened, we ended up doing everything and we still see him by Zoom, which is super handy. And we found a man called Robert who I had an initial phone chat with. And I said, you know, what Wade had said and what I wanted to achieve. And he said, yeah, I reckon I can help you. So we had a 2.5 hour session over Zoom with him. And we were both pretty anxious going into that session because, I mean, what if the person just says, look, this isn't worth saving? You know, I don't know how I can help you. That would have been awful. And we did a very, very intense session with Robert for 2.5 hours. And I was just saying to my love club last night in our monthly session, that 2.5 hours, and I've done a lot of coaching and mentoring and board sessions and advice sessions, I mean, a shitload of that stuff. That was the most powerful coaching I've ever had in my life, that 2.5 hours that myself and Wade spent with Robert. And we just, I remember hanging up, and then I was going out to do something, and Wade's like, can I come with you? And we held hands, and the lightness we felt, that we felt like, okay, we found someone who can help us. Just the fucking relief. I can't even express to you. So we went through a pretty intensive process with Robert. And what I found really interesting actually about that first session with Robert was that we had spent, so Susie had kind of asked a little bit about our families years ago when we first started seeing her. However, Robert spent, I think we spent about 70 to 80% of that first 2.5 hour session talking about our families and how we'd grown up and the parental dynamics and so on. And that was really telling for me that, of course, like when we come into these relationships, we come in with all of the patterns, great and not so great, that we've developed in childhood. And then we expect this other person to be able to just magically heal us and make us happy. So it was, yeah, it was big work, really, really big work. And I'm so glad we did it, because I feel like we're connected again. We're a team again. We're loving again. It's like our relationship has transformed. And I'm not saying it's perfect. You know, we still have our issues, and we're still, you know, still, I think probably in relationships, you're always going to have certain things that you're working on and working through. But it was really, really transformational. And I think the biggest thing was us taking radical self-responsibility for our own behavior and our own patterns. And all credit to Wade, you know, he's been the one that when we've hit, you know, a shit patch, or we're in an argument, or we're having a challenge, that he's the one that says, okay, what would Robert do here? And brings us back. So that work, I mean, it was a massive low at the time. I feel heavy and really sad talking about it. But it's a high because we're still here. And the future looks bright for us and our relationship. And I feel like we parent so much better because him and I are in a such better place. And it's given us pretty much a life skill for our relationship. So, I mean, initially it was probably first aid, and now it's like almost like an ongoing health protocol for, okay, how do we operate here together? What's my own individual user manual and what's his, and how do we make them work together? So that's been a really, really big high. And I would say if there was one achievement that I'm most proud of this year, it's that him and I have worked our shit out, because that's, as I said, it's the glue that holds everything together. We're good, everything is good. We're bad, everything is bad. And actually something interesting, I mean, Robert has just taught us so much. And something he taught us is that for a man, and he talked a lot about men's brains, which I was talking about with my little last night, and we were just cracking up. It was so funny because it's so true. And what Robert was saying is that men and women's brains are wired so differently, and men are very capable of compartmentalizing. So if a man is having issues in his relationship, you know, whether it's his significant other, romantic relationship, or any other relationship, to a certain extent, I mean, not to a full extent, because I know Wade would not say that, they can compartmentalize. They can kind of just say, okay, cool, that's happened. I'm now in my work zone and I'm making this happen. Or I'm now at my mates, I'm doing this happen. Or I'm at the gym and I'm making that happen. Whereas for women, when Robert said this, I was really challenged by it, because my feminist came out in a big way, like my mama bear feminist came out and said, that can't be true. But what Robert said is that when a woman is in a relationship, the biggest measure for her on how successful her life is how successful her relationship is at that one point in time. Because that's how a woman judges the success of her life, you know, whether that's right or wrong. And I think, I mean, if we think back to tribal times or primitive times, it would make sense, because for a woman, where the man's going out to, I don't know, kill the bison and bring it back and protect her and her kids and go out and fight off rival tribes and so on. If your relationship with him is good, then you're safe, you're protected, you're secure. Whereas if it's not, then you're exposed. And I've wrestled with that since Robert said it to us a few months ago, but it makes sense to me. And whether it's feminist or not feminist, I fully, fully agree with him when he said that. So that was a really big high. I didn't expect to cry during this one, but no doubt I will again. And as I said with the business episode, when I'm doing these episodes, like I literally just have bullet points. Like I've got number one, Lexi. Number two, where was my number two? I can't even find it now. I yeah, Wade's business challenges. That's it. So I don't know. This is kind of freestyling as I go through this. Another big high of this year was my village, I feel, coming together even more. So last year, I actually wrote about this in Baby You're Remarkable, how when we finally, like, we went to the Gold Coast, we came back, we moved to the inner west in Sydney and found a really close friends of ours moved in across the street. Other friends moved in across the around the corner. I connected with Leela through Instagram and she lived in that area. We make really good friends with Gemma next door and all our kids are similar ages. And it's just been really lovely to have like people near us. Like we've never had that myself and Wade before. Our friends have always been just freaking scattered all over Sydney to the point that when we were moving back from the Gold Coast going, where can we live? Like where are most of our friends? There was an almost even distribution across the entire city, north, south, east, west. We're like, okay, we'll just pick our own place because we can't really base ourselves near anyone. So last year, that was really, really special. I should have listened back to my highs and lows from last year before I did these, but I haven't. So I think I would have mentioned the village, I call them my village ladies. I probably mentioned that last year. However, this year, and I feel something I learned is that when you are in a depressed state, the last thing you want to do is actually reach out to your friends and be seen and talk to people. And it's the last thing you feel like, which is ironic because that's the thing you need the most. So I think this year, as I rebuilt my mental health, I felt like I could actually kind of ease back, not ease in, but like fall back into the village and the community and actually enjoy it and participate fully. And that's been beautiful. And during ISO, I think it was like, what did we figure out? 9 or 10 weeks, I think. What actually happened was myself, Wade and Lexi self. So we took Lexi out of daycare and three of us self-isolated for 2 weeks. And then friends of ours, Leela, Sean and their little girl, Shanti, who's the same age as Lexi, self-isolated as well. So we each self-isolated for 2 weeks. And then, I mean, I didn't know what we were doing. We were forming a bubble. Like, I didn't know that's what it was called. And then what we did was all of us stayed. I mean, we didn't see anyone else other than just us for like 10 weeks. And that was an absolute godsend. And I didn't talk about it on Instagram because I was like, are we breaking the law? What's going on? I don't know where this is going to go. But it was an absolute godsend. I mean, mostly probably, I think, for the kids that they actually had company. So what we would actually do is that each week Lexi would go to their house for two days a week and we would take Shanti for 2 days a week. And then what we'd do then is every Saturday night we would alternate sleepovers. So it just meant that particularly, you know, given that you've been cooped up with your child for 7 days, it meant that each set of parents every couple of weeks would have a bit of a break. So that was amazing. And for me, I would kind of describe myself as a bit of a lone wolf. Like I kind of just like do my own thing. I'm very independent. I don't really like relying on people. And for me, that was a really big, it was really big growth for me because we needed to rely on them. We needed to be really intimate. I mean, they knew exactly what was going on with myself and Wade at the time, which was, that was when all the shit was hitting the fan. So yeah, there was no prettifying during that time with them. And it was a really lovely experience for me because I felt accepted for who I was, regardless of, you know, if my makeup was done or if my relationship was going really well or my business was going really well. It might sound batshit crazy, but it was a really big learning and a huge gift and a huge blessing for me. And I mean, since then, since we came out of isolation, it's funny because we moved because of mold last year. And then those other two friends that I mentioned who were around the corner from us have moved closer to us again. So, I mean, even Sunday morning, I took Lexa down to the park and there were two other of our mates down there with their kids. And it's just been really, really nice. I've never had it in my life because even growing up where my parents live, we lived 2 miles up a mountain. So it was, I mean, I had one friend that I would walk to. But other than that, like I've never had friends that you could just walk to. It's been a really lovely novelty. I've really, really loved it and really, really valued it this year. Now, another low of this year, I mean, I'm speaking for probably every single person listening here, was just the distance from friends and family, the forced distance. So the plan had been, so I was last back in Ireland in February last year and then June last year, myself and Wade, Wade came back with us the first time and then myself and Lexi went back solo in June. And I find it's always very hard to say goodbye to family when you don't know when you're going to see them again. And there was no plan at that point back in June. And then myself and my sister earlier on this year started talking about her coming over with her husband, their little girl, and she was due her second baby in August. So that was the plan, that they would come over to Australia for Christmas, spend a couple of weeks here in Sydney with us, and also see some of Blaine, her husband's family. Family and friends over here. He's got two brothers, I think, and a best friend living over this side of the world. So we were still very hopeful. And then probably around June time, myself and Jenny said, okay, this ain't going to happen. And she was due with what turned out to be my nephew. So any other year, if Christmas had been taken off the plans for whatever reason, I would have been back in Ireland in September to meet my new nephew. So that's been very, very strange this year to not have met him yet. It's really like I met Fia when she was 4 weeks old. So that's been very, very strange. And also, I mean, I try not to dwell on this too much because it's just too anxiety inducing. But I've always said to myself, like, I live so far away from everyone in Ireland. And I've always said that if anything happened, I could be home in 24 hours. It's like, if anything happened, I would make a decision very quickly. Right, I'm going home, get on the next flight, and I would be home probably within kind of 36 to 48 hours. I would be at Dublin Airport with everyone. So that's been very anxiety inducing this year. And I've got a number of Irish friends and just expat friends over here in Australia and people who live elsewhere, who, you know, Australians living overseas. And I know that's been a really big anxiety for many of us this year, is just that if I needed to get home, that it's not available. And I know if things were dire enough that I could get back, but it would just be so much more challenging to actually get back than just, okay, I'm just going to book the next Etihad flight. It doesn't matter how expensive it is. So that's been hard. And yeah, hopefully next year will mean we can get home. We'd really love to spend Christmas in Ireland next year. But yeah, that's been hard. And, you know, as I'm recording this mid-December, there's no end in sight. Like, as far as we're aware, that's like, there's no immediate plans that travel is going to get better. We've just had the Trans-Tasman bubble announced here in Australia, which means we can travel between New Zealand and hopefully some other countries as well. But I mean, to travel to Europe, given where Europe is at, it's looking highly unlikely right now. So that's been a big low. And I feel like there are people who've had really big challenges in that area, like people who haven't been able to get back for funerals or births or partners who've been separated for months on end. So I know there's people who've gotten it a lot harder than I have. Like, I totally get that. But I felt it was important to name check that one, but also for not just for me, but for everyone else who's experienced that low this year as well. So another one, and it's just so bizarre. I feel like this year has been such a big year in terms of the current affairs or news agenda that I'd actually forgotten all about this. As I said, I went back through my Instagram feed just to kind of remind myself what had happened this year. And at the start of this year, I'd seen Lisa Messenger had done an Instagram post and Deborah Hutton about donating food to bushfire victims. And myself and Lexi went shopping. We filled up a massive trolley in Aldi. And then her and I, it was like a Sunday afternoon, we brought, I think it was like six massive bags of nappies and baby food and pasta and dry goods and toiletries to Natalie Ann, which is a salon in, it's Inner West. It was about, I can't remember the actual suburb, sorry. It's about three suburbs from us. It might be Croydon, but I don't know if I'm making that up. And so, yeah, so we dropped it over and I was so inspired. The whole salon had been cleared and there was food, toiletries, everything was just stacked around and there was a small army of people in there working. And I said to Natalie, Anne, can I come help tomorrow? Like, do you still need help? And she's like, we always need help. So I dropped Lexi to daycare the next day and came and spent the entire day volunteering. And it's weird to put this as a high because there was so many people suffering at that time, and you know, a lot of people still are, the fallout of everything that happened with the bushfires. But it just felt like I was contributing. And I feel like so many times with news headlines that we just watch and feel helpless. And it just felt so good to be in there, mind, body, soul, actually fucking doing something and making a difference. And yeah, I really loved that day. It was a soul expanding day. And I was just reading back over my Instagram caption that I'd said. And I said, it's probably the most life affirming day I've ever had in my life, which is a pretty big call. But I would absolutely back that up still towards the end of this year. So I thought it was really beautiful. And I think I just saw the strength of the human spirit and particularly the Aussie spirit, because that's where I live and that's where I saw it. But just people coming in who you had a sense they probably didn't have very much themselves, and they're bringing bags and bags and bags of, I mean, I remember one woman who had hardly any English just handing me 10 beautiful brand new towels. Just the generosity and the giving spirit. You don't get to see that very much day to day because we just do our charity donations and we kind of get on with their days. So that felt really, really special to be able to be part of that. And yeah, hats off to Natalie Ann and her whole team and every single person who donated time or goods to us that day. It was a very, very special experience. So the next high I wanted to share was, this has been on my goals for a couple of years, and it's just one of those goals I never got around to. And this year I finally made it happen. And it was to actually do training in transcendental meditation. So I've meditated for many years now, and I created my own practice essentially. But I've heard so many people talk about Vedic meditation, and so many people that I really trust and admire and very close friends are passionate practitioners, or what do you say, practitioners of Vedic meditation. And I'd been in touch with a teacher called Tom Cronin quite a few times saying, you know, when are your next dates? And for whatever reason, it was in-person training over a Saturday and a Sunday, and I just couldn't make it, or the budget wasn't looking too healthy that month. So I said I'd do it another time, or I was away, or whatever was going on. So I'd never actually committed to doing it. And then during ISO, Tom announced that he was going to be doing virtual trainings over Zoom. So I committed to it, and I spent, it was 8 hours over a weekend. So we did 2 hours, 8 to 10 on Saturday morning, 4 to 6 on Saturday afternoon, and then same times again on Sunday. And it's just been such an enriching practice. I'm so grateful now that the time I spend meditating is, not that it wasn't valuable before, it was, but I'm getting to a place with my meditation that I never ever got to before, whether I was in guided meditation or whatever, I just never ever got there. So I've been quite religious about my morning meditation, Monday to Friday at least. But with Vedic meditation, the suggestion or the strong recommendation is that you do 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the afternoon or evening. And I feel like I've been getting the 20 minutes in the morning, but not necessarily the afternoon one. That's happened. I was very good initially when I did the training, and then it's dropped off. So that's something I really want to do next year, because the difference when I do it twice is massive. And I even notice, and particularly when I did this training in, I think it was June, I did this training, late May, June. And I've been very consistent with it over the last month since then. And last week, just kind of end of year, lack of motivation, was sleeping later than normal, and just wasn't getting up and getting the morning meditation done. So I didn't meditate for probably five, even maybe six days. And on Sunday, I could feel heavy. I know a lot of people describe depression as the black dog coming, and I felt like the black dog was around. And then Monday morning, I was very teary, very emotional, very stressed and panicky. And I just realized, I was like, Lorraine, you haven't meditated for almost a week. And I went back to it. I mean, I felt much better on Monday, which was great. I think had a big meeting with the team, big planning session, had a great mentoring session in the afternoon. Myself and Wade had a nice evening together with Lexi. So, I mean, I was much better by Monday afternoon, but Tuesday morning, I got serious again. So I've been meditating the last two mornings, I've been meditating again. And I feel like it's my anchor. It gets me back to center on myself. So that's been a really, really big win. I'm really thrilled that I did that training and got a life skill. Yeah, that's something that I can always practice. And it's also something that I can go deeper and deeper into. So as I said, one of my goals for next year is to do it twice a day. I think that would be, yeah, next level awesome when I can do that twice a day. And another win is rebuilding my physical health. So I have always considered myself to be quite a healthy person. Like, I'm strong, I'm fit, I'm energetic. Like, I tend to have quite a bit of high, you know, quite high energy. Sometimes it turns into like nervous energy, but generally I'm just quite high energy. And when everything was going on with myself and Wade around March time, I started to experience night sweats. And the first night it happened, I absolutely freaked out. And I was, of course, hit Dr. Google. First thing Dr. Google said was it's either menopause or a particular type of cancer. So, of course, absolutely freaked out. And it was awful. I mean, waking up in the middle of the night with my clothes soaked, the sheets soaked. It was really quite scary. And I booked in a doctor's appointment that day and went and had the whatever blood test done, and everything was fine. It wasn't menopause. It wasn't cancer. So the doctor basically said, just monitor it. And I actually had some kinesiology for it. So this went on for months. It was horrible. And I would actually, what started to happen is I would be going to bed so anxious that I was going to sweat again that night that it would also affect my sleep, which would make the sweating worse. So I did some kinesiology, and that cleared it up for a couple of weeks, and then it just came back again. And I mean, I know it was completely stress related. Like, I totally get that. It was my body's way of just letting out some stress. And I was really anxious about it, which I know wasn't helping. I had booked in to see an endocrinologist I'd gotten a referral from my GP for an endocrinologist, because this was going on for, God, two, three months, this night sweats were going on. And it was almost like what am I saying? It was a negative cycle. Like I would have a night sweat. I would feel really stressed, which would then exacerbate the sweating, and it just kept going and going. Wade was pretty worried about it as well. I mean, the good thing was that we know there was no inflammatory markers in my blood, sir, and I'd know nothing else going on. So we figured, I mean, otherwise I was eating everything. I wasn't losing weight. That's the doctor was saying, you know, weight loss would be a bad sign or lack of appetite, which I was not suffering from. So as a bit of a kind of emergency SOS, I was at my chiro, and it's part of a bigger health clinic near where we live. And I saw that there was an acupuncturist there called Maggie, who specialized in treating women and fertility, which wasn't why I wanted to see her. But I was just drawn to her, and I said, okay, if nothing else, acupuncture will just help me chill out. I've done it on and off over the years. And I went to see Maggie, explained that what was happening, and she essentially, like without giving you an acupuncture crash course, in our bodies, there's our yin, which is our feminine energy, and our yang, which is our masculine energy. So all men, all women have that. We just have different balances of it. And she explained that at night is when we're in our feminine energy. So she explained that I had an imbalance in my yin energy. And I said to her, look, is this unusual? And she said, no, it's not. But she said, people normally come to see me with neck pain, shoulder tension, that kind of thing. And she said, what happens is that if we don't address that at that point, then it turns into, she called it a deeper pathology, like night sweats. And so I saw her, I was pretty emotional when I saw her because I was just so tired of worrying about it. And also, you know, as much as the GP said, there's nothing sinister going on, that was her language, you still always wonder, like, should I be getting a second opinion? What's going on? So Maggie treated me on that day, and she said, I want to see you every week for 8 weeks. And I was like, oh. It's a big commitment, you know, time-wise, financially. I'm going to make it happen. And I just trusted her, and I said, okay, I'm going to make it happen. So probably around week 5 of seeing Maggie, I started to notice an improvement. And by week 8, I just felt, I mean, the sweats had stopped, which was brilliant. And I'm continuing to see her. So I've seen her pretty regularly since then, not every week anymore, but pretty regularly. And I really feel like the work that she did with me, so it was acupuncture and also giving me different kind of concoctions of disgusting tasting Chinese herbs. And it just rebuilt my health. Like I really feel like I was the most robust I'd been in many, many years. And I actually realized that last year, I mean, now that I know what I feel like when I'm strong and energized, it made me realize how subpar I had been for probably 2 or 3 years. Like if I look back to when we were in the Gold Coast, for example, which was in 2018, like I was depleted then, but I didn't realize. I felt pretty good, so I thought I was okay. So that was a massive high of this year, was finding Maggie, building that awesome relationship with her, and having her help me in such a deep way. Because this is what I've realized, is when our bodies are in alignment and we're centered and our yin energy is balanced with our yang and all that good stuff, and our bodies are operating at it in an optimum way, everything's better. Like your mental health is better, your sleep is better, your relationships are better, you're thinking clear, like all of the things. So I've always kind of, I don't say prided myself, to be honest, I've probably marveled that I've never had some kind of adrenal burnout, given how hard I've gone at points over the last few years. But I feel like this was my equivalent. It was more of a slow burnout and literally burnout. You know, I would wake up feeling like I was burning up in bed during the night. So that was really, really awesome. I feel like, yeah, my hormones were much more balanced. And I was like, will I talk about this in this episode or not? Because I want to do a whole episode on this early next year. I feel like I've rediscovered my sex drive this year, which I think is partly due to the work that I've done with Maggie and that balancing that I've done with Maggie, but also a whole lot of other kind of realizations and stuff, which I will talk about in a different episode, which is going to come with a parental warning that anyone who is related to me is not allowed to listen to that episode. So I'm just very conscious that family might be tuning into this one. They don't need to know any more than that for the purposes of this episode. So that's been a huge win, is that feeling that I've really rebuilt my health. Because I mean, we all know this, if we don't have our health, what have we got? So that's been really, really powerful for me this year. Where am I going next? Oh, this is a bit of a funny one. To be honest, I was kind of struggling to find some of these because, as I said, it was a bit of a same year in a lot of ways. So in January, I got a quote from, I'd seen my hairdresser, Sadie, for Jesus, 5-6 years. And she's just looked after me brilliantly. My hair has always been in amazing condition. It's looked brilliant. But she's a few suburbs away, and the salon that she's in is also expensive, understandably, because they're amazing. And I decided that this year was going to be the year of, you know, cutting out anything that wasn't vital, lean, mean machine financially and time-wise. So I said, okay, maybe it would make more sense to find a hairdresser closer to home. And there's actually a hairdresser on our corner and they do amazing blow dries. So I got a quote from them to do the full shebang, extensions, color, blah. And it was a lot cheaper than what I'm used to paying. So I said, okay, I'm going to swap hairdressers, send Sadie a message on Insta to say I'm sorry, and started seeing this hairdresser. And the color wasn't right first time. It was very yellow. So next time I saw him, I said, look, this is what I want. And we got closer to what I wanted. And then the third time I saw him, so what? Yeah, we're up to like July, June, July. He colored my hair and then took me to the basin, did all the wash and the toner and all of the things. And then he took me back and was blow drying my hair. And I could see that a lot of my hair was like standing on end, like about an inch. It was like an inch from the scalp. It had just snapped off. And I had this kind of these tufts of like baby hair just sticking on, standing on end on my head. And I was just like, shit, this is not good. And I said to him, look, what's going on? He's like, oh, we just had some breakage. And he didn't seem very worried, which worried me. So for the whole following kind of 6 weeks, I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't go back. If it's literally snapping my hair off, I cannot go back. So I booked in with Sadie and I messaged her and I said, look, I'm so sorry. I'm coming back. That was the stupidest mistake I've ever made when it comes to my hair. And I went back and she was so kind. I brought her her favorite donuts and she was just so awesome with me. But I'm on a pretty much a rehab with my hair right now. So I know this seems very, very silly, but I just thought, yeah, some lows are lower than others. And I'm on, yeah, she took my extensions out straight away. And I'm on, yeah, a lot of intensive treatments. I went back, I've had two sessions with her now. She wouldn't put my extensions back in. They're not going back in again to the new year. And thankfully, I've had no more breakage and the breakage is growing down, which is a massive relief. So I know that's a bit more of a, not a bit, that's a very, very superficial one. But it also needs a hat tip. So lesson to me, from my lesson this year, friends, was if you've got a great hairdresser, stay with them. Don't do what I did. Okay, another high this year was finding exercise I like. So again, these aren't like world shattering, but they've all built up in their own way to leave me in a much, much better place than I could probably headed into 2020 in. And so at the start of this year, I said, okay, I want to shake up my routine. I've just been doing yoga pretty much for a couple of years, like a lot of yoga, but still, I don't know, just yoga. Like I wanted to do more strength and core stuff. So I did a couple of trials and then I joined a gym near me, which was like the full on HIIT. Ugh, rowing, boxing, running up and down dark hills in the middle of, you know, 5 a.m. in the morning is like, ugh. I mean, I was glad once I'd done it, but at the time, I mean, I just not look forward to it. That's weights kind of exercise. It's not my exercise. And so then when the gyms eventually, poor gyms, God, heart goes out to any business owners this year, like gym owners, hairdressers and so on. When the gym had to close, then they switched to an online model. So I was like, okay, cool, I'll do this. And I did pretty well for the first probably 3 weeks. I was pretty committed. And I'd go out in the afternoon, kind of before I started dinner. And I'd go, we've got the tiniest garden, but I'd go out there and do my lunges and my whatever the hell, I don't even know, exercises. And it was just so hard to get motivated. And I knew I wasn't pushing myself and whatever. So I actually cancelled that membership after that. And I went back to my yoga studio. I did the online membership in my yoga studio. So I would do that pretty religiously. I was pretty good. I did probably like 4 sessions a week and I did a lot of walking. Something I really loved during ISO was my walk every morning. And then what I would do then is I'd set up like phone dates with friends and family back in Ireland, which was really, really lovely to do. And so, yeah, went back to yoga. I mean, it was not as good, of course, as going to a studio because I'd roll out my mat at the bottom of our bed. Lexi would be puttering in and out. Sometimes she's have meltdowns. Sometimes she's want to do it. I mean, oh God, it was not like a connecting experience. It was kind of like just get the job done type yoga. And then I said, okay, once we're out of ISO, probably like July-ish, June, I was like, okay, need to decide what exercise you're going to do. And I gave my yoga studio notice. It was 2 weeks notice. And I said, okay, by the end of this 2 weeks now, you're going to have to find something else. And I was just really, I just sense of inertia about it, like, oh, I just can't be fucked trying to find exercise. And I think this is the problem as well. When you fall out of the habit of doing good things like eating well or exercising, you forget how good it feels when you're doing them. And at the end, I was out for a walk. I was out walking 2 days in a row when I saw this gym instructor from somewhere I'd done a trial for in January. I saw her twice on two different days. I was like, okay, that's a sign. Just go back, sign up, get yourself organized. So I signed up in, God, when was that? July, I think I signed up. So it's called The Studio. They do Pilates, Reformer and Bar, which is a really nice combo. And I just loved it. I'm still doing it. I absolutely love it. It's the exercise that I really enjoy. It's not high impact. What am I saying? I don't know the difference between impact and intensity. I should probably go ask Wade that. He's the fitness guru in our household. But I just really enjoy it. Like, I feel like I work hard, but I'm not running around like a maniac. I feel like it's good for my nervous system as well. I think that kind of high intensity doesn't necessarily work for my body type and my personality. So it's just been awesome. And it was just really good. I committed to doing 5 sessions a week, which I've done pretty consistently. And just to see the difference in my body, my core getting stronger, arms getting stronger, just felt really, really good. And I'm really loving going there. I mean, a few weeks ago, I did 6 sessions that week and it didn't even feel like a stretch. It was really, really good. I'm really enjoying it. So that's been a really big high this year. Where am I jumping to next? So, I mean, a low for this year, and I mean, I need to be very, very clear. I have been incredibly fortunate this year. However, I do just want to give this one a mention because I think it's important. And I also know from my community, particularly with women, and maybe men as well, but my community is mostly women, this is something that a lot of people have experienced this year. And just that sense of lack of space. I think having partners at home who wouldn't normally be at home, having kids at home, I mean, God, all of you in Melbourne, hat goes off to you. You've been absolute heroes during this year. So just that lack of space, whether it's personal space or time space, I think also not being able to travel has really contributed to that feeling for me. Because for me, traveling, even if it's going to Brisbane overnight for a speaking gig, it just gives you that sense of expansion and new surroundings. And for me, travel just feels like that sense of opportunity and that sense of possibility and just time to think, like getting on a plane where your phone can't ring and you're just in your own zone. So I think I've really felt that this year, that lack of space. And I could feel it. I went to Bali in February and I didn't realize, but I pretty much just squeezed in a trip before it wasn't possible anymore. And I was quite sick during that week. I had Bali belly for the first time ever. And I was quite sick. So I don't feel like I really got the mileage out of that trip. And at the time, I thought I would be back again in May to host my retreat over there. I mentioned this in my business highs and lows episode. I don't feel like I managed my energy well this year. And of course, that was just the year that we had. But yeah, just to get away for a week or even just 3 days and just do a retreat in Australia, I think that would have made a massive difference this year. So, I mean, I think Wade's feeling that as well, that lack of space, because, I mean, he hasn't been on a plane since November last year, which is just nuts. So I think that's probably a symptom. I mean, a low-grade symptom, and God knows if that's my biggest problem this year, I'm doing pretty bloody well. But yeah, I think that lack of space has been a big one. And I think just that space to have more ideas. I think that was big for me this year. And as I said, I need to very clearly put that in context, that it's very token in the greater scheme of things and that what other people have experienced this year. And another high then, I mean, this isn't necessarily a high, it's just something that I'm very cognizant of and grateful for. It's just the fact that I do get such flexibility in my life because I do have my own business. And I'm very wary. I used to say I like the freedom of having my own business. And I just think that's absolute bullshit. Like, a business does not give you freedom. It's actually the opposite, I think, a lot of the time. But what my business does give me is that flexibility, and just that flexibility to have my Lexi day. So every Wednesday we have had Lexi day. She's at school now on Wednesday mornings, which is a bit sad. Like, I miss our lazy Wednesday mornings. But, you know, I have had that flexibility. When COVID hit, I did have the flexibility to work my business around it and create some new offers that would contribute to my business and replace revenue streams that maybe had been cut, like in-person speaking. Anyway, I'm talking about business. But yeah, I think I'm proud of that again this year, that I managed to keep myself self-employed this year. and I got that flexibility around my family and my exercise. And yeah, it's not something I take lightly. I'm very grateful for that. Obviously, there's a huge amount of work goes into staying employed for an entire year, as anyone who has their own business will probably attest. But that's been a big high and something I'm grateful for this year. Something that's a low, I don't necessarily think this is a low. It's more of a something I'd like to improve on next year, is just to be a better friend. I feel like I was so in my own lane this year, just hustling in my business and, you know, dealing with myself and my AIDS challenges and dealing with my health issues and all of that. And yeah, I just think I could have been a better friend. Like, there's care packages I could have dropped off. There's friends overseas that I could have checked in with more regularly. And there's friends that I could have had more phone conversations with. That's something I'd like to be better next year at. And I think that also comes maybe from that sense of lack of space. I don't think I had the headspace to be more thoughtful and do the things. I think a lot of us were just kind of, I don't think I was necessarily in survival mode, but I definitely think anyone who I've connected with in my community in Melbourne and friends, they were definitely in survival mode for quite a few months there. So yeah, it's not so much a low. No one has given me feedback yet on my quality as a friend this year, but it is something I'd like to invest in more next year. I feel like I started to find my feet with being more connected with people this year, and next year it's about, okay, I really want to be a great friend. Like, I know my friend Stacey, when my Get Remarkably Organized program was going tits up, the launch was going tits up, and she arrived over with this massive, I've never seen them before, like a massive bunch of cherry blossom. Like, they're like cherry blossom branches and cake. And what else was this? Was something else she brought over? I can't remember. There was definitely cake and there was definitely flowers. And she was just there, you know, and I was just a mess. I was upset. Wade was upset because I'd taken, you know, he'd borne the brunt of my stress over the previous 24 hours. And she did that. And I was like, I want to be that friend. I want to be the person who does that. So yeah, be a better friend on the list next year. Okay, so that's almost the end of my personal highs and lows episode. There's one more high that I wanted to share with you. And I've saved maybe the best to last. We're having a baby. So, it feels surreal to record that. It's been a very long journey for us. We had, as I mentioned already in this episode, we lost two babies last year. And then obviously with everything going on with Wade and I, a baby was not on the agenda. I mean, it was on the agenda, but it would not have been wise and it wouldn't have been fair to bring any baby into the world when we were feeling like we had a lot of work to do ourselves. So, it's been a long journey, and we are pregnant, which I am so thrilled to be able to tell you in this episode. And I didn't expect to be able to share this with you. Things happened a lot quicker than we thought, which is amazing. And so we're due our second baby in June next year. So I'm thrilled to be able to share that with you. I'm sure there'll be lots of discussion about the whole experience. I will do a separate episode on this news because obviously it's a biggie. It's a big, big, big one. But that is, yeah, we're ending the year on a massive high knowing this happened. We just told Lexi, as I'm recording this, we just told Lexi on Friday and she's so excited. And she said to me the following night, she kind of forgot about it. And as I'm recording this, actually, my family don't know yet. So they will know by the time this episode goes out, but they don't know yet because we want to surprise them on Christmas Eve. So yeah, only a very small handful of close friends know right now. And my team in the business as well. I think we're going to tell Wade's team today because I'm here in his office today. So yeah, we told Lexi Friday and then we had a Zoom call with my parents the next morning. Or not Zoom, sorry, WhatsApp chat, video call. We normally talk to them on Saturday morning while we're having our pancakes. And I was just on edge that she was going to say something and she didn't say anything. I was like, oh, thank God. And Wade is like, I think she's just forgotten about it again. And then that night I was putting her to bed and she's like, Mama, do you still have the baby? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, the baby in your tummy. I was like, yeah, I still got the baby. And she's like, okay. So yeah, I'm really thrilled. There's obviously a huge amount I want to say about this, but I will keep it for a separate episode and just dive deeper into this one. But yeah, we're obviously over the moon. It also feels... It's been a very stressful couple of months. As I'm recording this, we're almost 14 weeks pregnant. So it's been a very stressful couple of months given last year. Just, yeah, I'm very aware of all the things that can go wrong now. And obviously things could still go wrong now, but I'm just being grateful for that right now. Myself and baby are very, very healthy. So yeah, I wanted to leave you with that last high in this episode. So I'm going to sign off now because I need to go get a lot of tissues and clean up my mascara from this episode. I didn't think it would be such a cryy one. But thank you so much for listening. It does feel highly self-indulgent to record episodes like this where I don't feel like I'm teaching or sharing. But if I've learned one thing, I've learned that from people sharing their stories, I learned so much from them. So I'm hoping that by sharing a story of my personal year this year in 2020, that hopefully there's something in there that will help you in your life and maybe help you find peace with some stuff that happened for you this year as well, because I really do think we heal from sharing. And it's healing for me doing this episode. You know, it's very, I think when you start crying, there's obviously emotion that needs to be released. So thank you for listening to my crying on this episode as well. Okay, my dear, thank you so much for joining. And And yeah, there's other episodes happening this holiday season as well, which I really, really hope you enjoy. Much love. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is @LorraineRemarks and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.